new proposed marriages amendment bill. It's open for public comment. If you're not familiar with the bill, it's raised questions on pre-existing provisions for the official recognition of polygamous marriages in South Africa. Of course, polygamy is a lived experience, a lived reality for many cultural and religious groupings across the country. And an amendment to the Marriages Act will see the official marital recognition of polygamous unions. Joining me on the line is Charlene May of the Women's Legal Center, also with Kerry van Ludwig, a family law attorney. Kerry, I'll start with you. Good morning. What is this bill? What is the public comment on this bill hoping to achieve, among them being the official recognition of polygamous marriages?
That's absolutely probably the most important part of it. Yes, good morning. I jumped right in without even greeting you. Good morning, everybody. The other thing that I find important in this bill is it specifically talks about our international obligation to prevent child marriages. In our previous Marriage Act, which is even older than I am, there's still a possibility of, let's call them children, boys 18 years old and girls as young as 15, marrying as long as they had consent. That's one of the important things that comes straight out in this bill. And I don't know if public comment will even address itself on that, because it's right at the end of the preamble. I think all the big interest is on polygamy, and I think there's going to be quite a lot of discussion around the fact that there is still not provision for polygamous same-sex marriages.
We do have this phenomenon in South Africa called ukutwala. It's essentially older men taking on girls as brides. That's already, as far as I understand, been outlawed in this country.
I'm not sure if it has been outlawed, because if you look at the Marriages Act, provided there is consent, I think it is still technically possible, and maybe Charlene will tell me that there's case law that speaks to that. But this definitely will outlaw it now.
Charlene, can you confirm that? We want to talk about polygamous marriages, but the issue around child marriage and ukutwala has been raised. What is the standing on ukutwala? As far as I am concerned, there was a public and policy campaign many years ago to outlaw it. What is currently the stance, Charlene?
Hi, morning, Lester. Well, there's no legislative framework. So where ukutwala has been raised as a defense in criminal cases, where men have been charged with abduction, rape, trafficking for the purposes of sex, where they've been charged with those crimes and they've claimed ukutwala as a defense, and claiming that it's part of their custom, the courts have determined that that's not a valid defense. So ukutwala is not a valid defense for the abduction of a minor child or for the rape of a minor child. But there's no legislative framework. It's an exciting, important development to see that, effectively what the bill tries to do is to criminalize child marriage, which is something that we've been advocating, for the department and government to do for some time.
Let's focus on what gets the attention, and that is polygamous marriages. Kerry, what is the current recognition status of polygamous unions in South Africa?
Basically not recognized, and that is why we have the bill.
Not recognized even on a customary union basis?
I'd have to look again at Recognition of Customary Marriages Act, but the important thing, it is partly recognized. The important thing is we run into problems when you deal with who owns what and the status of the first wife. So in terms of Recognition of Customary Marriages Act, and then you've got to remember there has to be compliance. When you're talking about Recognition of Customary Marriages Act, there has to be compliance with customs. So, again, it gets incredibly complicated. And what this bill seeks to do is put it in writing exactly what you need to do if you want to enter into a polygamous marriage, so as to protect the first wife in the way that is now starting to come out. And remember, this is all marriages. So it's not only restricted to customary marriage. And that, again, is the importance. The bill says, it actually, one of the things in its lead up, it talks about, whereas South African marriage law has been fragmented, because we're looking at the Marriages Act, we're looking at the Civil Union Act, and we're looking at the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act. And they're all same but different. And what this bill tries to do is pull them all into one so that it applies to everybody. And again, we do have some loopholes where everybody is not included, and it's all in one document. But it, as I understand it, it's not going to necessarily supersede all those provisions of those three pieces of legislation as well. And again, I bow to Charlene, because I think she has far more involvement on the development of this law, where I have a lot of involvement in how the current laws actually apply in today's divorce and family law world.
And Charlene, it would be, and reading through the act, it's in recognition of protecting women in these unions, whether they be marriage, civil unions, or customary marriages. It would be about the protection of women. There have already been some strides. A couple of years ago, there was a, we only had just recently had recognition of Muslim marriages, but several years ago, we've also had somewhat policy recognition around the recognition of second wives, second, third wives in Muslim marriages, and with regards to inheritances and estates. This law looks to streamline and particularly protect women in marriages, civil unions, and customary unions.
Lester, thank you. I think it's important that you've raised the issue around recognition of Muslim marriages, because that's really where this piece of legislation comes from, although it doesn't necessarily acknowledge it. The Women's Legal Center obtained a judgment almost 2 years ago in the Constitutional Court that compelled the South African government to enact legislation to recognize Muslim marriages. And what the Constitutional Court also did was it declared our existing marital framework. So the Marriages Act, the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act, the Civil Unions Act, it declared, and the Divorces Act, it declared all of those pieces of legislation unconstitutional because they fail to recognize and give protection to women in Muslim marriages. And what that judgment did was it compelled the Department of Home Affairs to develop a law that would give that recognition. And what the department opted to do was to create, as Carrier said, the streamlined process where there is effectively in future going to be a single marriage statute that will then recognize all of these different forms of marriages, including the Muslim marriage. In respect of the polygamy, look, you said it at the introduction to this conversation that polygamy is part of everyday life for millions of South Africans, whether it is part of their custom or whether it is part of their religious beliefs. And what the obligation on the state is to legislate to ensure that there is protection to all of the parties, but also in recognition that women most often are vulnerable when it comes to interpersonal relationships, such as marriages or domestic partnerships. And so what the bill then tries to do is to give that legislative framework and recognize that we have polygamy in the country. It is being practiced, but we need to protect the parties in it. And so what they've done, what it appears the suggestion is that they take the existing framework of the recognition of customary marriages. They take that legislative framework and they simply apply it across any other category of persons in South Africa that practices polygamy. The disappointment, I think, as Carrie's pointed out, is that the bill makes it very clear that the state only seeks to recognize that men have the ability to take more than one spouse.
Plenty of questions here about whether a bill would recognize polyandry as well on a woman deciding to have more than one husband. Is there any clarification in that regard, Charlene?
Well, I think that you may remember a few years ago when the department released its green paper. Polyandry certainly reared its head there, and people were either very excited at the prospect, or it seemed very daunting to some to wrap their head around.
Why would a woman want more than one husband is my question. They already struggle with one of us. Let's go to Eyewitness News Traffic quickly. Charlene and Kerry van Ludwig, family law attorney, and Charlene may have the Women's Legal Center. You have any question? You have any comment on the Marriages Amendment bill? On your thoughts on polygamy, but also in polyandrous relationship. Speaking to Charlene Mayer, the Women's Legal Center, Kerry van Ludwig, family law attorney, we're talking about the Marriages Amendment Bill currently up for public comment. Kerry, a question to you from our WhatsApp line. The question is, what protection do people in polyamorous open relationships have? We are three living together in a loving co-partnership without any formal agreement or contract. If one of us die, what happens to our estates? Kerry?
Well, I think that is such a valid question, in the sense that in this new law, even if one is not if one is not married, there's no interim situation unless you contract for it. There was a lot of thought about this quite long ago, about whether we should have some sort of civil partnership bill and so on and so forth. It hasn't materialized, and I think people need to be very, very careful to remember, whatever kind of relationship you're in, if you haven't legalized it by a marriage or concluded some sort of contract between the parties involved, then apart from very isolated incidents, such as Charlene mentioned, which is where this act stemmed from. In fact, I think you mentioned it, that the court started to give recognition to Muslim marriages through things like road accident claims for breadwinners. So there are isolated instances, medical aid dependence, those sorts of things, but there is no automatic legal relationship that is recognized that gives you cover for things like maintenance, co-ownership of property, inheritances on death, and those sorts of things. So people must be very careful to not think that they have automatic blanket cover by virtue of we are in a formal relationship, unless it's been formalized in law.
Because there's this thought that if you are living together for a particular while, if you're a recognized couple for many, many years, there's this automatic, I know it's an assumption by even some people that I know, that there is automatic some form of recognition that you're some sort of in a co-partnership arrangement without the legal formalities of a civil union or a marriage. That is not necessarily the case, Kerry.
Let's say no with the biggest capital N. There are, as I said, there are some small exclusions that can be argued. There are little legal hats that one can try and hang hooks on to protect those people when it comes to the end of their marriage. But if people would understand the blanket principle is there is no such thing as we are in a common law marriage, then they will get themselves into a lot of trouble if they believe that that exists.
Charlene, we've spoken about marriages, but what about divorces? What about the end of unions? What provisions does an amended bill hope to propose when it comes to people ending unions or marriages?
Lester, so our separation, termination of marriage in the form of divorce.
Because it's a contract. It's a legal contract. So we have to speak legalistically here.
So the termination of that contract through divorce proceedings sits in the Divorce Act. The Divorce Act was amended very late in last year. I think it's one of the last pieces of legislation that went through Parliament in last year, was the amendment to the Divorce Act that now allows for Muslim couples to bring divorce proceedings at the termination of a Muslim marriage. I'm not sure whether the president has signed that amendment into law yet. But the interim relief that was granted by the Constitutional Court certainly still is in effect. And so that's the legislative framework. I don't anticipate, having looked at the bill, that there would really be a need for the Divorce Act itself to be further amended to accommodate the proposed provisions in this bill. Like I said earlier on, they've pretty much taken what is in place now, and simply extended it, to now recognize and protect people that were previously excluded, although they've not included everybody that's been excluded thus far.
Kerry, some practical examples being posed, and you're the current lawyer in practice, Charlene, of course, with the Women's Legal Center. A question, say, if I'm the second wife and my husband dies, can I claim maintenance from the first wife? Would that only be relevant in a group marriage?
Well, you wouldn't be claiming it from the first wife, as I understand it. Again, Charlene is the legal brain here. I'm just the mechanic who implements the law. But as I understand it, you'd be claiming it from the estate of the deceased spouse. And yes, you could. There is a Maintenance of Surviving Spouses Act. And once you become officially a spouse, then I don't see anything in this bill that would change that.
Charlene, that accurate?
Yes, there's been quite a bit of litigation to recognize the rights of subsequent spouses. And so there is indeed, either at the point of death or divorce, those maintenance obligations, does indeed extend to second, third spouses or wives that are left behind. And they would have to, of course, engage whoever the executor is of the estate and be able to prove that they were in fact part of this union. And the distinction very often that's drawn, is between what was spousal property, so what did we share as husband and wife, and what did we share as a family? What is my property in respect of my husband, and what is our property in respect of our family? So there isn't necessarily this huge, big estate that's being created where everybody shares happily. It is really around the individual wife and what that husband, I think, as Kerry's pointed out, the spousal, the maintenance obligation sits within that relationship. It doesn't extend to another spouse in the marriage.
Noting that polygamy is a lived reality in many cultures and religious groups in this country, there is a body of thought, Charlene, that polygamy is intrinsically anti-woman, that it's men exercising power over woman, that women systemically rely on men for support and survival, and that it's left up for men to decide whether to take on another wife. And let's keep it to a polygamous conversation and not polyandry. But there's an argument in some quarters that say that polygamy is intrinsically anti-woman.
Lisa, I think that with the work that we do, we're really guided by the women that we consult with and that we see, right? We know that within the nature of poverty, the socioeconomic circumstances of women in our country, that women in many instances are financially reliant on men that are breadwinners. What we would argue is that that doesn't mean that men get to benefit from the structural and systemic discrimination that is present and that is caused by these socioeconomic circumstances. So we can't legislate and give men beneficial or preferential treatment and positionality within relationships and justify it by saying, oh, well, they get to do this because they are the financial, they are the breadwinners. This is a perk that you get when you are rich. There's a judgment that was handed down last week, in the court in the Northwest High Court that said a rich man should have, as befits a rich man, he is entitled to more than one wife. And And therein lies, I think, when you talk about the discrimination and the patriarchy that's present within custom or that's present potentially in the religious framework and within our society. That's what we need to start dismantling. And I think that's what is the disappointment in this draft marriage bill, is that it perpetuates that discrimination without justification and explanation as to why it is only men. Why society thinks it should be men, as you've just illustrated. But at the heart of it is custom is alive, custom is ever evolving. Custom is what we make it and within the framework of the Constitution. And so there is always scope for it to develop along the lines of those constitutional principles.
Really appreciate both the times of Kerry van Ludwijk and Charlene May of the Women's Legal Centre. It's about a amendment bill currently open for public comment, a formal recognition of polygamy under the Amended Marriages Act. I'd like your thoughts. 021-446-0567. You can drop me a WhatsApp, 072-567.